Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, Editor-in-Chief of Total Film, and welcome to Total Film's Last Picture Show, our new podcast series. The elevator pitch? It's the end of the world, and you have one last night at the cinema. What four films are you programming, and why? Our guest today is a British director whose background in theatre has informed many of his films. The child of puppeteers, he attended the Anne Scher Theatre School before studying film at Central St Martin's and moved from there into making music videos and TV drama. He made his feature debut with the critically acclaimed adaptation of Austen's Pride and Prejudice in 2005 and followed it with award-winning Atonement in 2007. He switched gears with The Soloist and Hannah before returning to adaptation with 2012's Anna Karenina and 2015's Peter Pan prequel, before awards glory with The Darkest Hour in 2017. Though he's dabbled with streaming with The Woman in the Window last year, he's back to big screen theatrics with Cyrano, an adaptation of the musical version of Cyrano de Bergerac. And yes, puppets feature prominently in the opening scene. Possibly a nod to his formative childhood years? Our guest today is Joe Wright.
He's here.
Cyrano?
Cyrano.
Pleasure to meet you, Cyrano de Bergerac.
You're a freak. Freak.
My dearest friend, I'd be very angry with you if you died.
I want to start by talking about Cyrano, which I have to practice saying that way, having had a lifetime of saying Serrano.
Yeah, well, Serrano is a very English way of saying it. And when I was in America, they called it Cyrano. And I was like, that's just so American. And then I discovered, unfortunately, that that's also how the French pronounce it. And that it's the British who had got it wrong. So now I've taken to calling it Cyrano.
Yes, it is correct. And yes, it's just, it's drilled into us, isn't it? I wanted to ask you about obviously seeing Cyrano when you first saw it on stage with Peter Dinklage. Were you going with the idea before you saw it that it might be something you'd want to make a film of? Or was it just that once you saw it, you could see the cinematic potential?
Hayley Bennett invited me to see the workshop production at the Goodspeed Theatre in Connecticut. It was a tiny little auditorium, seated about 120 people. I was really just going to see her in the show and then was blown away by the combination of her performance and Peter Dinklage's performance and how modern and immediate and authentic and intimate it seemed. I wept like a baby from about the end of the third act and didn't stop till the curtain went down. Even then, I was kind of just so emotionally enthralled by the piece that I didn't think of adapting it to a film until I went back and saw it a second time and then had a little bit more critical distance and was able to think about, actually, this would not only work, but possibly be enhanced by a cinematic adaptation.
Yeah. And also, we're in an era now where musicals are back. Do you think that this is a film that previously might not have been an appetite for, but now people love musicals? And what is it about musicals, do you think, that connects with audiences, perhaps on a level that just a dramatic film doesn't?
I don't think dramatic films aren't connecting, and I think some musicals don't connect. I think that possibly people are looking for something that can reflect their own experience back at them, but seen through the prism of something fantastical, something that can almost romanticize their own lives and act as a form of escape, but at the same time, they're looking at themselves. It's a bit of a contradiction, but it kind of makes sense in my strange mind.
And so obviously, once you decided you wanted to do this and you got the backing for it, you also decided that you were going to do it during one of the most difficult times to make films. You were in lockdown and you decided you were going to do it and create this bubble on Sicily so that you could make this film. Why did it feel so urgent that you had to do it then?
Well, it's a movie about human connection and our need to connect with other people and often our inability to connect with other people. It's a love letter to love. And I felt that having been starved of human connection, I really wanted to firstly bring that story to an audience, allow them to connect with each other, allow them to connect with the story, and allow myself to reconnect with my collaborators, with my cast and crew, and make sure that they were all able to put food on the table, frankly, because at the time our government wasn't doing much for the film industry, and people were having a really hard time. So I thought now was exactly the time to make the film.
I assume you had a much nicer lockdown than other people. You were on in Sicily, in this beautiful town, Noto. Was it as lovely an experience as it looks on film, or was it an absolute nightmare trying to get that done with COVID?
There were days where we thought we would never complete it, and every day we were grateful for, which in itself made the production a kind of act of defiant passion for love and beauty and human connection in the face of very bleak circumstances. So it was a defiant production. It had a lot of challenges, but it felt important to everyone involved.
There's an amazing sequence where we see Cyrano take on 10 men with a sword, and it's a sort of fluid one shot, essentially. Was that difficult to do, or are you just a master at this after the sort of long shot from Atonement that we saw in Dunkirk? Is this something that you can do in your sleep now?
Far from doing it in my sleep. Every film is difficult and challenging, and every film we approach almost feeling like we have to relearn everything we've ever learned before. Every film is so different, and I've never done an action sequence as a single shot before. The story meant that I wanted to really bring home to the audience how Cyrano was able to triumph in difficult physical circumstances.
Let's just talk about that, because obviously that's a change from the traditional Cyrano we see, which is the nose, always somebody with a nose. Why do you think that this works for modern audiences and is a bit more relatable, perhaps, than having an actor with a stuck-on nose?
Well, I think the actor with a stuck-on nose, usually a kind of, you know, tall, handsome actor with a stuck-on nose, is able to take that nose off and go to the pub afterwards. And we're somehow aware of that. What Pete brings to it is his whole life experience. And we're aware of that innately. And so there's a kind of level of authenticity that is very moving.
There's also a scene that is the sexiest letter reading I think we've seen in a while. Was that essential as well to sort of really bring home to modern audiences who don't write letters anymore and WhatsApp and social media that, you know, that letter writing is this beautiful art and can convey so much? It's a sex scene, isn't it, with a letter scene?
Yeah, it's kind of like a ménage à trois with a letter between three people who are never actually in the same room as each other. I think it's definitely a love letter to love and to the power of words, although words chosen carefully in an email can have the same effect as a letter. I think the film, even before the pandemic, though, had a kind of relevance in terms of current modes of communication, the internet, so on, feeling like they make us more connected, and yet they don't somehow. Somehow they disconnect us. Just being in a room or in a space, talking face to face with someone is a very different experience than social media.
Yeah.
That's a very obvious thing to say, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it applies to the fact that Cyrano is hiding behind, you know, the image of another. That seems
absolutely
very modern as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about where your sort of film education has come from in terms of now ended up directing Cyrano, but what has been influential to you over the years. So if we are going to have our very last night of big screen entertainment, and it is films that look glorious on a big screen here, not a streamer that we're pausing and nipping out for a cuppa, a big screen experience, what film would you put on the screen first for your last night?
First, I think I'd put on Paul and Pressburger's The Red Shoes.
The Red Shoes. daringly original musical that captures all the glamour of the south of France in exquisite technicolor, blending compelling beauty and high drama with a love story of sheer enchantment, assembling a cast of international stars to endow an enthralling film with their rich vitality, and making the outstanding debut of this or any other year, a lovely red-headed girl graced with all the talents, Moira Shearer.
Not least because it is the most perfect piece of escapism. It's a world that I wish I inhabited. I want to be there when I see that movie. I want to live in it. And it's about creative endeavor. And so I've dedicated my life to my creative endeavors. And so I identify with that.
How old were you when you first saw that? What stage of your life were you in?
I was very little. I think I was about 8 or 9. We didn't have a TV at home, but a lady who babysat me did have a TV and a VHS machine, and she taped it off the TV for me. And we watched it together on a Friday night eating fish and chips.
And do you think you understood it on any level then as an 8-year-old?
No, I don't think I understood it at all. I understood when they were putting on a show and the notion of that. And I loved the excitement of putting on a show.
And do you see aspects of that in your own work? Are there things that you can see echoes of that film in what you make as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's a kind of fantasy element to that film, although it speaks to powerful, true human complexities. It speaks to them through this kind of prism of fantasy, technicolor, and that always appealed to me, and it's something maybe I'm drawn to more and more.
Is it something that you watch regularly, or is it?
Yeah, so recently again, actually, my partner had never seen it before, so I was able to show it to her, and that was really exciting. And my daughter, who's nearly 3, loves dance, and so we showed her the ballet sequence.
Gateway drug then to Powell and Pressburger for people.
Exactly,
for you.
Exactly.
Perfect. What was the first film you actually saw at the cinema? Do you know?
Yeah, it was Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and it scared the living crap out of me. I saw it at the Odeon Leicester Square. Yeah, it wasn't the aliens that scared me. It was the dad losing control and building these kind of mashed potato mountains that really terrified me. This idea that your dad actually might not be as stable as you think he is.
Absolutely. And was that an experience that you thought, I'd like to do that? Or did that come much later?
I didn't know how it was done, so I can't say I'd like to do that. But I did, after that night, go home to my mum and ask her how films were made. And she got a long strip of cartridge paper and divided off a box and drew a picture of a prince and a princess, and then divided off another box and drew a picture of a dragon coming to steal the princess, and so on, the story of St. George. And then she got a shoebox and cut an aperture in the lid of the shoebox, put the paper on 2 sticks and wound it through the aperture so that one picture followed another, and said that's how movies are made. There are sequences of images that tell a story. And I was really impressed by that. And that was the beginning of the fascination and the discovery of the craft.
Tell me what your second film would be on your programme.
The second film would be Being There, Hal Ashby's Being There.
I'm Chance, the gardener.
The gardener?
Yes. Since I was a child, I've worked in this garden.
Then you really are a gardener?
Oh, yes.
May I ask your name?
Chancey Gardner.
Mr. Chancey Gardner, are you related to Basil and Perdita Gardner?
No, I'm not related to Basil and Perdita.
Gobbledygook.
You know, Chauncey, there's something about you. You don't play games with words to protect yourself.
I had no brains at all.
was stuffed with rice pudding between the ears.
On television, Mr. President, you look much smaller.
Dumb as a jackass.
As long as the roots are not severed, all is well. And all will be well in the garden.
You know, I'm saying this all in the context of it's the last night on earth. And so I would want something that fed my soul and something about the sort of beauty of people. And I've always loved the archetypal holy fool. And I think Chauncey Gardner is my favorite holy fool. So, yeah, being there. It's a poem, really, you know.
Mm. Yeah. And when did you see that, do you recall?
Yeah, I think I was probably a stoned teenager when I saw that and, you know, thought it was out there and wild. And then I've subsequently watched it many times and realised that my stoned view of the movie was pretty bang on, surprisingly.
Yeah. Tell me if you when you're putting this programme on, do you have a favourite cinema? Is there a cinema that you would want this night to happen on?
Well, it would have been probably the Arclight in West Hollywood, but unfortunately that's recently closed down during the pandemic. So that's heartbreaking and we need to get it reopened somehow. I like the Barbican Cinema also. I like the Curzon Soho.
Classic. Tell me about your third pick.
My third pick would actually be a current film called Don't Look Up by Adam McKay.
I hear there's something you don't like the looks of.
We discovered a very large comet.
Oh, good for you.
It's headed directly towards Earth.
This comet is what we call a planet killer.
At this exact moment, I say we sit tight and assess.
Sit tight and assess?
Sit tight.
And then assess. The sit tight part comes first, then you gotta digest it. That's the assessment period.
This is the worst news in the history of humanity. He just blew us off.
What are we gonna do? We have to release the information.
So we just leak it.
It's just brilliant. But it's a satire on the end of the world. Given that we're facing the end of the world in our imaginary scenario, I think having a movie that makes me laugh out loud about the experience I'm actually going through would be probably quite a good idea.
It's very good. Very good.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, this is a starry, starry cast. Is there anyone in that cast that you haven't worked with that you still sort of would like to?
I do think that Jonah Hill smashes it in that movie. And I was speaking to Adam McKay about the film. And he was telling me about all the moments that Jonah improvised, including the prayer he makes to stuff, which is one of the highlights of the movie for me. And I discovered that was all improvised. So yeah, maybe Jonah.
Okay, we might have heard it here first. What's your next film that you'd put on this programme?
Do you know what? I haven't written a fourth one because I couldn't decide. I've written lots of fourth ones, but I haven't been able to decide on a favourite one.
You can go for five if you prefer.
Well, time's running out. You know, it's the end of the world. And,
I know.
And it's the last one. And I'm scared and frightened. And am I actually going to be able to concentrate on the movie? It's a worry. And do I know at what point the world is going to end? I mean, is it going to end like in 2 hours? Therefore, it has to be a two-hour film. Or can I just extend my life by watching a really, really long film? In which case, I might want to watch like Abel Gance's Napoleon, because that's like 6 hours. I'm going to go with Abel Gance's Napoleon, if only for how long it is and the fact that it's going to extend my life by even more hours.
Thank you.
When did you watch that film, and 6-hour film? It's quite an achievement.
I watched it only recently. I'd seen a bit of it when I was a student, but I'd never watched the whole thing until 2020 in lockdown. You know, suddenly I found I had the time to watch all the movies that I'd wanted to watch and never gotten around to. And so that was one of those.
Right. Tell me about, for you, the importance of the big screen. I mean, this we're in a time at the moment where cinemas were under threat as well with lockdown and everything else. How important is it to you that we do watch films in the way the director intended, on a big silver screen?
And listen to films in 7.1 surround sound, or even Atmos. And in a way, I feel like that's as important, if not more important, than the size of the screen. You know, if you want a big screen, you can just sit closer to your TV. But for me to have that totally immersive sound experience, and I'm a very strong believer that the experience, the cinematic experience, is 50% image and 50% sound. And what you're doing by watching it on that little speaker on your TV or whatever is you're undermining the sound experience and therefore the immersive experience. You know, there was scientific research that came out recently that proved that an audience, when they're sat together, their heartbeats synchronize. And it's that experience of sitting with other people, strangers or otherwise, and having your heartbeats synchronize in almost exaltation of this, for me, what is a borderline, you know, religious experience of seeing a great movie on a big screen with totally immersive sound. I think people are doing themselves a great disservice if they don't allow themselves that experience.
Yeah, agreed. Speaking of community and sitting together, who would you be taking to this last picture show? And it can be people that are alive or dead.
Well, I'd take my mum and my dad. My dad's been dead 30 years, so it'd be nice to see him. The last film I saw with him was The Cook, The Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, when it came out, which he thought was a very odd film, I remember. So I'd take them, I'd take my sister, I'd take the love of my life, and I'd take my three kids.
And they're going to love Napoleon, aren't they?
Well, Dad will. Dad will love Napoleon. Mum probably will. Not so sure about the three kids, but maybe they'll be asleep by then. I don't want them to be awake for the end of the world.
And when it happens, as the screen burns, what movie soundtrack
God, would
you like to
God, this is morbid.
Play?
This is so morbid. This idea of the screen burning with my children. I mean, like...
You put them in there. Is there a soundtrack that's just like the one for you, a movie soundtrack?
I guess maybe it might be the Miles Davis soundtrack to Elevated to the Gallows. One of my favourite soundtracks by one of my favourite artists. And he improvised the entire soundtrack whilst watching the movie. And I have a feeling that he felt the screen was burning as he played it. So maybe it'll be Mr. Davies.
Sounds amazing. Are you a salty or sweet popcorn?
I don't like popcorn.
What?
I know.
What do you eat when you watch a film?
I don't go to the cinema to eat. I go to the cinema to watch a film. You don't, you know, go to church to eat popcorn. It's my church. It's my religion.
Right. So no popcorn, none at all. And are you a trailers fan or no trailers?
Just I like the trailers. Yeah, I like the trailers.
Okay.
Don't like the commercials. So you have to time it quite carefully.
Yes. And obviously no toilet breaks. Or are you okay with people slipping out and in or no?
I'd prefer them not to. And when I'm watching one of my own films with an audience, I find it a bit disturbing and I have to keep an eye on who's gone out to check that they do come back in.
Okay. So, yeah, you're a monitor for when people...
I monitor other people's toilet breaks, which sounds okay. A bit creepy, doesn't it?
That does, yes. If you had to describe one film that you think has made the biggest impact on what you actually produce... Is there one that you think, if I hadn't seen that, I wouldn't be the artist I am today?
I think when I first saw Taxi Driver, although thematically it's completely different from the films I make. When I first saw that movie, it was like having been brought up on Keats and Wordsworth and suddenly realizing there was Bukowski and Ginsberg and all of these guys out there. It was a realization, an epiphany, that there was a different kind of poetry that was just as poetic and somehow more expressive of my own experience. And the craft with which he worked, the way in which he composed film as an experience in time, blew my mind and completely changed the way I thought about filmmaking.
Scorsese is a wonderful filmmaker, but he didn't make it onto your list. So let's look at that programme again. So for Joe Wright's programme of films for The Last Night on Earth, we're going for The Red Shoes, Being There, Don't Look Up, and Abel Gance's six-hour Napoleon. Let us know on Twitter if you'd be up for sitting in the dark for that lineup of films. But for now, thanks for sharing your programme, Joe. And we'll be back with another Last Picture Show. So do come back to see who else is in the projector booth.
That was the Last Picture Show podcast from Total Film. Let us know what four films you'd watch at the end of the world. You can tweet us on @TotalFilm or connect with us on Facebook or our Instagram page.